Well, hello on Wednesday, September 11th.
Yeah.
This is Brian Madden. You're listening to the BrianMadden.com live podcast. So I'm sitting here in TechTarget's London office. Joining me here in the office is friend of the show, John Rolls.
Hi.
So thanks for coming over today.
No problem. I love the fact we live less than an hour apart from each other. We're doing this in London, but okay,
yeah. And Gabe's here too from Omaha.
Hello.
And we're streaming the show live via San Francisco.
All those sounds of the city that you hear are not coming from Omaha.
Authentic London background noise.
Yeah. Where it is gray and overcast. So a bunch of stuff for today's show. The first thing I wanted to do is just paste in the link to the chat. Where's my chat window? So here's the day that I met John, the day after, when you were at Quest.
Yeah.
And we were in Redmond. where we hung out.
In a simulated Hong Kong skyline behind us.
The real skyline that had reflections of the light, studio lights on it. But it's crazy how different we both look. That was only 3 years ago.
I look better, right? Is what you're saying. Thank you. Yes.
Hey, we are both more distinguished.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah.
Than we were back.
This
then.
Was, this was 6 years now. Ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
The color and quantity of hair has changed for all of us.
We haven't really caught up. And I mean, you know, I see you at events and that kind of stuff. But you were at Quest Software, where you did product management and were responsible for the V Workspace product.
Yep.
I know you were at Citrix before that doing...
Yeah. Well, Citrix was quite a while ago. That was 98 to 2002. And I looked after various things there. I was at Quest. I was at ScriptLogic, got acquired into Quest in 2007, I think. And he was looking after V Workspace. Then we put together the bigger group. We added V Workspace to some of the ScriptLogic products, and ChangeBase and Remote Scan, and put together this whole user environment or user workspace group, which still exists as part of Dell. And so I was looking after that. But I'm a small company guy. I like the challenge of taking something small and growing it. So
well, and it's funny because I forgot you came in via ScriptLogic. So you landed at AppSense then.
Oh yeah.
Is back to your roots in that sense a little bit.
But it combines everything I've done so far. It combines, you know, user environment management, you know, Windows desktop configuration and user experience management with desktop virtualization and some of the other things we did in Quest. So, yeah, this has been a very easy move from a technology point of view.
How long have you been in AppSense?
Since November.
So a month is it now. So coming up on a
year.
Yeah,
it'll be a year in November.
Yeah.
So, not that long. Everyone else in AppSense has been there like 7, 8 years. I mean, it's a real company. People generally are there for, you know, a long time. And so I'm the new guy.
So apart from having to deal with pissant bloggers, how's it? Is it all right?
It's great. I mean, we just did this press release today, I'm going to quote because it's worth mentioning. We had a fantastic last quarter, which is the end of our financial year, even though it's calendar Q2. Record revenue, huge growth, over 3,000 customers, many multi-million dollar deals. I mean, if this is a bad time at AppSense, I can't wait for the good ones to come along. You know,
you announced a CEO too, so that's cool. That's an announcement.
I know. I mean, part of when you restructure a company, and part of the restructure is that you change out your marketing department. The corporate communications get a little bit laggy, perhaps.
Yeah.
And it would have been nicer to perhaps get this news out a little sooner and. Then we wouldn't have had to deal with our favorite bloggers speculating. But we're actually having a fantastic time. We've been through some changes and we're ready for the next phase of growth. We changed out the exec team and with a team who are used to scaling a company to the next level. And AppSense has been through we call it rocket ship growth. But I mean, I was really surprised because I knew AppSense 7, 8 years ago when they first tried launching in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people, they struggled at first, and I knew them kind of remotely. And so when I actually joined AppSense, I was genuinely stunned by it's 150 people or something like that in the US now, and obviously a big European contingent as well. it's just grown enormously. And you know, you get through a certain phase of growth, and it's time to change things up. But
and so that's kind of what brings us to today's conversation and why you're here. So I did the article a couple weeks ago about AppSense and saying, like, hey, I heard that they're going to, you know, the desktop business is boring old business. The growth is in mobile. And one of the comments you made was, hey, we got to update you because that's not right. And you're PM of the their desktop group. So I'm guessing, well, you're still there. So
no, I'm more than there. I mean, we keep joking that apparently Microsoft abandoned Windows as well because they just bought a mobile company, right? So, you know, it's very similar to AppSense. You know, the question I keep asking is, how could you do management of the user workspace, user environment without doing mobile and data? I mean, the workspace is so diverse these days. You can't manage Windows only. You have to touch Mac. You have to touch mobile. You have to, you know, for a data story as well, or else you're not doing the whole picture. And so that's what happened. We started a data product. We bought a mobile company, RapSphere. And that's an extension of our strategy. But the core strategy hasn't changed. The desktop part is still, you know, full going ahead. I've been touring the last 2 weeks in Europe and the United States, going over an 18-month roadmap for our desktop products and all the things we want to do there. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon. You know, it's still our core flagship technology, and will continue to be so. And, you know, it's very gratifying. The thing I keep hearing is, you know, every customer doing desktop virtualization or physical desktop management needs this part of the solution. They want to talk about how they manage the user experience and make it consistent as they move between different types of environment. And, you know, we're installed at these accounts, you know, this week, we're seeing 30,000 users, 73,000 users live day in, day out. We're a part of that stack. So,
and those are not just VDI and remote desktop customers. That's people using it for everything.
Yeah, and what I found really interesting is talking to, you know, some of these. We're in like 18 of the top 20 financial institutions, and when you talk about what they're going through, like these kind of phase two plans, they've got their previous desktop environment. They're putting a new one in based on Windows Server 2012 or something like that, Zen App 6, Zen App 7, or what, Zen Desktop 7. I keep asking them, you know, what percentage is actually on RDSH, terminal server, and what percentage is on that, you know, number of API? And we're still seeing 90%+ is being done on good old terminal server. And I just find that fascinating.
Yeah. You're an old terminal server guy. Come on. Fascinating or like gratifying?
Gratifying. Yeah. It's the same argument we've been making forever. When VDI came along, what did we first say? What can you do on this that you couldn't do on terminal server? And some things.
More expensive.
Yeah.
Well, you can give them admin rights.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
but you did that anyway, so.
Yeah. So it's interesting to hear that even though these, like, Generation 2 desktop virtualization infrastructures being rolled out company-wide, these massive institutions, they're still delivering 98% on terminal server.
The second time you mentioned Generation 2. So what do you mean, broadly speaking? Like, Gen 1 is when I tried to do RDSH and VDI 5 years ago, and Gen 2 is I'm re-architecting and doing it right now?
Yeah, I think, exactly. There's a lot of kind of like maturity reached the point now where they're kind of like, we've got an existing desktop infrastructure, it works, we've got 25,000, 30,000 users pounding on this stuff, and it's time for a refresh. We need to bring new versions of Windows Server, take advantage of 64-bit technologies, more virtualization, that kind of thing. In some cases, you know, they've proven it works reliably day in, day out in one business division, and now it's been expanded into the rest of the company. I've heard that story multiple times in the last 2 weeks. And what's interesting is, even though VDI has still kind of got the kind of like the new shine to it, they're actually able to expand what they already had and re-architect, keeping most of it on terminal server. And it's the ultimate non-persistent desktop, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, talk about stateless OS. It's a slice of an OS that goes away as soon as you log off.
So, yeah. And it's you know, no VDA. You can have Splot.
Fixed VDA,
you can have,
You
can have cheaper, you know, hardware. Although I guess, well, that's a different topic. Scott Davis actually was talking last week at VMworld about how they've commissioned some studies and they're looking at, from a density standpoint, RDSH versus VDI is about a wash.
But Scott's thing was that I thought they also did it from a technology standpoint to back up their claims that RDSH was not the appropriate solution. When compared to VMware Vue, because the density thing
that's is RDSH.
The density thing is not a new claim. You know, the VRC guys have been saying that for at least a year now. That the actual density numbers, the number of users, the number of desktops I can fit on a given piece of hardware, is really close. I think it's within 10 or 15%. And the challenge, though, is that still we need more infrastructure to support the VDI desktops. So it, while the density numbers are similar, the cost is still, you know, it's still cheaper to do RDSH. And I think I think that that's part of what Scott was talking about, was that, that those costs are changing and that, you know, they still had a study that backed up what some of their claims that, you know, like I say, RDSH didn't live up to view in terms of performance or user environment experience, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. So, but the point, and not to get off track on that, because obviously there's still the other licensing issues and lots of other reasons to still love RDSH for years and years to come. But I like when you go back to what we've always been saying, you know, it's about Windows. It's going to be in different form factors. Fundamentally, if I'm managing Windows, I shouldn't have to care whether it's RDSH or VDI or VM or native client or whatever.
Yeah.
This
it's a container for Windows apps. I mean, that's really what you want to deliver, because people want the apps. They could care less about the rest of the experience.
They want apps. Yeah. They want data.
Yeah.
Their personality, their settings, that kind of thing. But
I sound very anti-VDI. I'm not. It has its place. And, you know, that's still a topic we massively get into and we support and have a lot to do with that. It's just, I just found it fascinating. Literally, the last four conversations I've had, how much is still being done on session host.
Yeah, well, I'm super happy. I mean, that's the thing. And it goes back to it. Like, this is, you know, like I said, I always talk about this in terms of form factor. And I'm not, you know, we talk about the whole thing when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
But we have, like, there's hammer and pliers and saw. And, like, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying screwdrivers are bad. I'm going to say if I have a nail, I'm gonna use a hammer and not beat it with a screwdriver. But I still want a hammer and a screwdriver.
Yeah.
And I'll have the option. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, and that's definitely something we've seen with we've built in with the desktop now, the suite of desktop tools we have at AppSense. It's whatever you've got, we will fit into it. In many ways, it's a box of all kinds of capabilities. And every customer environment we go into, they're trying to do something a little differently, different applications, different delivery methods, integrating with their own back-end systems, self-service portals, those kind of things. So we've kept it very flexible. We've built a ton of APIs recently. So we're always integrating with a different system.
Because Desktop Now is not a product, really. Like
It's a suite. It's a suite of three products. So you've got Environment Manager, which is Environment Management. It's a UEM product, which does two things in itself. It's kind of the policy side of things, which is kind of the old script logic approach. It's been, you know, things
like
around
what the
forever.
Company wants to enforce.
Yeah, so you're pushing settings down centrally onto the desktop. Then you've got the personalization side of it, which is about capturing their own settings, what the user has that configure for themselves, so that the servers they can connect to, the themes of an application, those kind of things, and making sure that follows you wherever you go. And so that both of those part of Environment Manager, and those capabilities go together because you often end up, you know, tweaking one with the other to make them work together.
Then they have because settings are just files and registry and stuff like that. So the admins say, here's all this file. Here's the settings that have to be the same always. Here's the settings we're pushing on as default, but users can change.
Right.
Then everything else we don't care about, but if a user changes it, we want to keep it. So allow it.
Yeah, and in some cases you want to force some settings, but allow personalization of other parts of it. I mean, it's all highly configurable. The other next piece is Application Manager, which is it doesn't actually manage applications. It should probably be called Privilege Manager or something like that, because it deals with application whitelisting, blacklisting, and user rights management or privilege elevation. So you don't need to make a user a local admin anymore. You just elevate them for the particular task they need to do. So if one application needs to run with admin privilege or an ActiveX control or a control panel, it gets elevated for that task. But the rest of the time, they're not a local admin.
That task that's... It's just that process that has the permissions, like run as sort of. It's not the actual whole session changing.
Exactly, yep.
And the third piece
is Performance Manager, which is primarily being used on kind of Zen app servers, terminal servers. A lot of this kind of CPU memory stuff is built in now, but it's kind of a broad brush approach. We're still winning deals with this, where we're taking a really granular approach to this application gets this much extra resource for that particular pool of users. Still gives you up to like a 30% increase in density on a Zen app server, back to that topic again. So that product, you know, it's the oldest one AppSense has, but it still has a lot of value and customers still use it.
It's there and it works, so why the hell not?
Yeah, it's, you know, phenomenally reliable, and it pays for itself very, very easily, because if you can prove a 30% increase in density, that's 30% less servers I need to buy.
And that does CPU throttling, it does process privilege raising and lowering. It does.
Well, that's application manager. Performance manager only does the CPU throttling management and the memory piece as well.
The DLL rebasing.
Yeah, and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Can you buy these in separate products?
Oh, yeah.
And desktop now is sort of the overall brand.
Exactly.
For the
It's a suite. Most of our customers do end up buying all of the desktop now products and using them together, and there is some overlap between them. But you can buy them individually as well.
And most of your customers also, I mean, kind of what you're saying, are they using desktop now as this is the way that we configure our users' environment, again? And so, you know, with 30,000 users, for example, yeah, probably 25,000 of them are laptops. And but then if they log into a TS session, a RDSH session for remote access or something, then their mail settings are still going to be there.
I mean, right. I mean, you take the customer I was at this morning here in London. Their users typically have a laptop or a local session running at the same time as various Zenapp published applications running as well, side by side. And they will move in and out of different sites. They may even be logged into different sites within the same company, you know, one in New York, one in London, maybe one in India, and they just want everything to be unified across all of those. So if I'm using, for example, a Reuters app, it should all be pointing to the same source of data rather than coming from different sources, but depending on where I'm logged into. So it's making sure that kind of stuff is consistent. But it's managing the user experience is probably the best way I can think of describing it.
So what are you doing? And I think I wrote an article 2 years ago about, you know, is this going to, this sort of user settings management, moving this off of Windows platforms into other platforms?
Huh.
And I don't know what I'm asking quite. Like, is there a Mac version of this? Is there a mobile version? Is there something like, because I'm thinking, like, my mail server is my mail server, and my settings, I don't know, maybe no one even wants that. I don't know. Like, do I want something where you can control it on the Mac also, but then if I log into a Windows terminal server,
you're replaying the exact same conversations we had internally. Because we did prototype all this stuff. We did have demos of, you know, here's my Mac, here's my Windows, and we point to the same mail server, and I can move my bookmarks around.
This is cool. Who's going to buy it, right?
But, well, if you use a Chrome and you log in with a Google logon, your bookmarks can kind of follow you anyway. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of the services you actually want to move between platforms kind of are available anyway. What we did discover is common between platforms, though. I want my data to follow me. I want to use the same documents, whether I'm using my iPad to view it, whether I'm editing it in Word, or whether I'm using it on a Mac, or whatever I'm using, wherever I am, whether it's in a virtual session, a desktop set, a local session, VDI, terminal server, whatever, my data needs to follow me. And the policy, my security policies need to follow me as well. So as an administrator, I give you access to the following folders, shares, applications. You can do this or that and the other, but that needs to be uniform across all platforms as well. So those are the things we're working on, is making sure that follows you everywhere, regardless of.
That's a good
platform.
Point, because I rebuilt my laptop yesterday. It had been like a year, and it wasn't connecting to any Wi-Fi anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Mac, and so it re-downloads whatever, and the OS. And then, I mean, all my apps in the App Store, I had to pull edit, like Dropbox, Office. I don't know. What else did I do? A few apps. It's 100% right now.
Yeah.
And it's up and running. I mean,
it's a true BYO. You can provision it yourself. But the thing, so, you know,
the bookmarks, my point is all my important settings are up there in the cloud. I had to log on to a bunch of services again, and then like they're just all back. So maybe I don't need that from my IT department.
So exactly. What you want, you have to make sure you have access to your stuff, your data. They follow you, and when you're accessing corporate data or systems or whatever, your security policies are immediately back in place as well. That's the stuff that they need to manage. I mean, put my futurist hat on here for a minute. You know, in the future when we all bring our own devices, not everyone buys that argument, but there will be an increasing segment of users that provision and manage their own devices. That's what the IT department's role is to make sure that you've got access to the data you need to do your work, and when you're doing that work and touching that data, it's happening in a secured, protected way. The rest of the device is yours. And that's pretty much the vision with the mobile now. We're doing that already on mobile devices. We want to extend that onto other platforms.
Yeah. So, so let's back up a little bit.
Yeah.
Data now.
Oh, yeah.
Does data now do this, what you just described, or this is a future?
No, data.
So Gabe's written about data now. But maybe give us the 30 seconds on what data now is, which I know is not you, John Rawls. This is a different sort of department, right?
But it's all AppSense. Data now is a data distribution and policy engine, if you like. So it's a way of delivering access solving the access problem. I'm on different devices. I want to get access to my corporate data under the policies that, you know, I need a different place to get to it. So we have a web client, a Windows client, a Mac client just going into beta, and clients for iOS, Android, and others to follow. So solving the access problem to corporate data, and the unique thing is there are other solutions that do that. Ours uses existing file stores. We're not selling you cloud file storage. Whatever you've got, we'll connect to it. You've got file servers, SharePoint, we don't FTP, I mean, Dropbox, whatever. We'll amalgamate it into one portal.
You just put... Okay, so are you actually creating a portal that hooks these things together? Like, do you have to write plugins for all these providers, or is it just... Is it just that you're just encrypting the files, then you don't care where the files go?
We have basically a plug. I mean, our server is the midpoint that has the plugins to those various providers. So for an end user, all I see is, you know, I log on, here's my data now folder, and it contains access, you know, links to all the stuff I need to get to. But on the back end, it could be pulling data down from all kinds of different sources.
So basically, I have to have, but I guess you have all the big, I mean, you've got SMB and SharePoint.
Yeah, right,
and.
Yeah.
Dropbox and Box and
right.
Probably most of the people would want.
Yeah, but we're not in the business of selling file storage or, you know, file servers here or cloud storage for that matter. Our job is to act as kind of a broker in the middle of it all, make sure that you've solved the delivery and access problem. So,
And then you mentioned then to get into mobile.
Yeah.
So there's the mobile now products mm-hmm. also, which is sort of that was came from the wrap sphere.
Yep.
Acquisition, and that's now this is Jack is the guy who knows way more than me, but this is MDM, MAM, sort of all that.
Yeah, and some secure apps as well built into the whole thing. So it's a combination of kind of the various approaches there are in the market to managing mobile devices and user experience. So again, we create the secured container on the endpoint, if you like, and your applications run in that. So the applications are protected when you're accessing corporate applications, but the rest of the time, the rest of the device is yours. So there are certain applications will have a little icon on them to say this is a corporate app. You use this, we're touching corporate devices. You may have to enter an extra PIN code to get to it. Data going in and out of it is encrypted, those kind of things.
So I can see how data now sort of ties that together.
Exactly.
Because all these products, so you can sort of see like the... I don't know. You can see the PowerPoint on how these all integrate together, like strategy-wise. Like, oh, you got to manage all this stuff, and it's all about end-user computing. But where the rubber meets the road, how these things actually hook together. So, data now is running on all platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Does mobile now and desktop now, do those grow to sort of common management console or common application provisioning?
Yeah, you can see a natural strategy emerging here, can't you? I mean, this is the obvious direction we want to get into, unifying the management of the, you know, the enterprise workspace, whatever you call that, the user's workspace. Already, you know, you can put data now inside mobile now, so that mobile now protects the data now application. So data coming in and out of it is encrypted, corporate policies around it. And so the two of them already naturally work together and will converge more and more over time. And then we bring the desktop now piece in as well. You know, take bits of technology from that makes sense on managing Windows and Mac endpoints and start to combine that. That's kind of a long-term strategy, but you can't touch or claim to be in the user workspace business or the enterprise workspace business without touching all those components, because that's what the enterprise user has. I mean, you know, it's sitting in an office here surrounded by all those kind of devices.
Yeah, and look at, you know, we know, like, Res is getting into those spaces, Citrix and VMware. I mean, it is sort of everyone's in all these spaces to be the whole, you know, end-user computing or enterprise, you know.
It's a hot space, and it's the obvious move forward as we're seeing these workspaces. I think Gartner calling it, you know, the unified workspace, which a term like Chris Wolf, I quite like that.
Do you ever imagine that, you know, one of these ironies, or maybe not, the drivers of why we have to do this is because, you know, Windows is not the sole container anymore. Like before,
right.
Windows was everything. And so if I managed Windows, then I was fine.
Yeah.
But now even when users are using Windows, we're not managing Windows. Like Data Now is a great example.
Yeah.
So a user can put Data Now on his or her home computer. It doesn't have to be a corporate managed device. And it's, you know, sort of here's your data. Do you see desktop now going in that direction where if a user brings their own Windows device in, that would be something where desktop now can put settings down into that? Or do you see that more of a role for like a terminal server. And if you want the full Windows experience from non-corporate device, you go in through a terminal server.
Yeah, so there's definitely a division between, we've got various terminology for this internally, trusted and untrusted devices, mm-hmm. or fully managed and kind of BYO devices, or managing the unmanaged, you might call it. There is definitely a difference between the fully corporately owned managed domain joined device and the way data now you want to integrate with that, and a true BYO device. Probably of all the BYO devices out there, Windows is probably the least common in some ways, because you've got a Windows device.
Oh, yeah. you don't need to bring it yourself. You already have one of those.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's made by Dell. It weighs £5.
That said, with Surface Windows 8.1 coming out, there is more and more of these things, these unmanaged Windows devices starting to appear now. And so, yeah, there definitely is a role where we need to expand to provide, again, a managed environment, a corporate environment within that. So
I'm just taking some notes because it's a funny question to ask about, the role of the unmanaged Windows device within the corporation.
Yeah, you get the term BYOC, really, or BYOPC. I mean, that's probably the least common BYO scenario.
Yeah,
but
yeah, nobody's doing that. Yeah,
and that's what kicked it off, actually. Yeah. Like, that's what kind of kicked this whole thing off, this whole BYO trend.
But what kicked it off was companies trying to save money. Nobody was asking to bring their Windows devices in. It was companies thinking, hey, can we just have these people bring their own stuff in?
Yeah.
Even then, nobody was trying to bring their Windows devices into work.
So, but companies support this. And, it's Martin Ingram, who's at AppSense, when he wrote about the HAPC, Home Access PC. Mm-hmm. He talked about how a lot of companies are struggling to deal with these unmanaged devices.
Right.
And he says, you've been dealing with these for years. It's like whatever the users use at home.
Yeah.
And if your solution is VPN and Citrix, then
keep
using VPN and Citrix.
And that's still a perfectly good answer. I mean, apart from the VPN part, I mean, it's just HTTPS tunneling now.
So your team, so you live in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
Your team is in Manchester.
I have this uniquely interesting role. Historically, up near Manchester in the UK is where AppSense kind of originated, started from. The core Desktop Now team is still mostly there. We started the second development office in Sunnyvale, California, just in Silicon Valley. And there is bridging between those two teams. We share technology. Data now is developed between the two sites. Some of the Desktop Now developers have been leaking over to Sunnyvale and vice versa. So I'm joined between the two. The majority of the team that I work with are in the UK, but we have this sort of like,
you live in the Bay
country.
Area.
I live in the Bay Area.
You're from the UK, I guess, right? I can't tell.
You can't tell.
I don't know whether it's.
I moved to the US 5 years ago. I have a sort of increasingly mid-Atlantic accent. When I'm actually in England and working with British people all the time, it's funny. I become more British again. I've noticed my parents.
Yeah, you got a blazer on. Look at this.
It's the American outfit.
The plane, there's a dude with blazer and shorts and penny loafers with no socks. So that's the ultimate, you're not quite.
But you know what that is, don't you? That's, I'm traveling with the jacket I'm going to need to wear for work, but I don't want to crease it by putting it in the, yes.
See, I don't want the jacket, so
I only know because that's
that's the
way
to solve
that. Have you
ever
wondered why you see so many jackets on people like in a Hawaiian kind of shirt and loafers and a jacket?
I saw something similar with a guy wearing Crocs. And I thought, this guy chose to wear this when he woke up this morning.
Yeah, those were his good Crocs, and he didn't want to crush them in his suitcase.
They were smart Crocs. Yeah.
So what are you doing? So one of the criticisms of AppSense has been the Desktop Now, like V8 products, mm-hmm. have had like bugs or like stability issues. You've only been there less than a year. So, like, is that, like, how do you guys deal with that kind of stuff and working on code quality and that sort of thing? Because I think we're seeing more largely in the industry, like Citrix, for example, is getting destroyed because of the shittiness of their receiver, like, code quality. So, there's a balance to deal with features and agile and agility and, like, enterprise stability.
Yeah. I mean, our press release speaks to that today a little bit. Now, companies go through phases. I mean, it's always, a balance, and there are times where the balance is toward feature addition.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been adding features like crazy the last 2 or 3 years. you know, the enterprise, the working with enterprises at massive scale, you add a lot of features. You add things for handling your delegated administration teams, merging configurations at the endpoint that have come from multiple different departments. You deal with log-on time optimization when the configuration is a megabyte in size. That's a lot to churn through. We added various. So I made a list earlier of some of the things we've added recently. Just all the things we've added to deal with the scale of device we've been dealing with, or change tracking, those kind of things as well. And so you're putting a lot of features in a short period of time into the product. And there comes a catch-up phase where you go, great, we've got all that stuff in there now. Now we just need to really make it 100% solid. And that's kind of what we've been doing. We started with the Service Pack kind of initiative back in, the first one was April, I think, this year. We won in July. We're working on Service Pack 3 now. And the feedback we're getting from customers has been fantastic already. There's sort of quotes that you wonder if someone made them up, where they say, we have now 6,300 endpoints, all with the latest version of it, and we have literally closed out every issue we have against AppSense, thanks a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is like, we actually got to frame that and send it to the dev team.
The world about that, too.
A press release.
Yeah. Well, so there is a mention in there today about, quality and stability. That is the thing, yeah. So, I was blogging like crazy and then switched into this product management role, and I've been a little bit slack. I've got a half-finished one that says, hey, I haven't blogged for a while, and it's been sitting in my drafts folder for 3 weeks now. So that tells you what's been going on, yeah.
Well,
so,
there's been 3 blogs since VMworld, so that's good.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of barren for a while. I'm talking on the AppSense blog itself.
But we need to get that communication out because we have been working really hard on that stuff.
And I think Keith has had a lot. That's kind of the industry thing. So Keith Turnbull, he's chief development officer for AppSense, and he was from Citrix before. Yeah. And I think the perception in the industry was he was sort of brought in and really got the product management, product development sort of, I don't know.
You bring discipline and experience to these things. You have a fast-growing company that comes as a startup. You get the products out there, things start growing fast, and there comes a point where you need to bring some experience, some real knowledge of how to build products for massive enterprise scale at a high level of quality. So Keith came in 2 years ago and brought that. We did things like just build a massive test lab. So we can simulate 50,000 users, extremely fast logons, and do all kinds of crazy tweaking of timings to try and unsettle things. All that has come in the last year, where we can really simulate these massive user loads now, and changing to more of an agile process, switching to different development tracking methodologies, all the stuff that you do as you grow up as a software company. And so AppSense is in much better shape from that point of view. And we're just starting to see the results now where, customers, the satisfaction is increasing by the day.
What is your, now, in your role changed at AppSense also? Because you said you're doing PM now, because you were CTO or in the CTO office or something like that?
Yeah, we had kind of 3 CTOs at one point focused on various areas. CTO is one of these nebulous terms that means something different in every company. It was much more of a kind of a spokesperson strategy kind of role. We put together this whole vision and long-term, 3-year roadmap of where we wanted to go to, and kind of got that done. And then we had some re-changes, new executive team, focused much more on execution and process, and it made sense to step into a more operational role. So I went back into I ran product management for the previous 13 years before I came into AppSense. So I slipped back into doing that again and.
So who's doing when you sit around now, the AppSense technical leadership sits around and envisions the future, envisions the roadmap, envisions what this company, what technologies this company wants to build. Who's doing that?
It's actually pretty much the same thing it was before with different titles. I mean, it's still CEO Keith Turnbull, head of development, the other 2 VPs of product management, myself and Ajay, head of marketing, and some other industry experts, strategy architects, those kind of people. Very similar looking group to what it was before. Just we have different titles now.
And how's Scott? So Scott's new to the sort of Windows. This is Scott Arnold, the CEO, and he's been in since May, I think, right?
Yeah.
So he's new to this space. I mean, I guess the CEO role at this company is more of business director, or is he getting involved in products you would direction, that kind of stuff?
Very much involved from a, you know, bringing operational, again, discipline, experience, make sure we're asking all the right questions and we're thinking the right in the right ways and doing things that will make sense as we grow. So he brings fantastic experience in growing companies and taking it to the next level and making sure, you know, that we are asking the right questions. We're testing our assumptions, not just building things on a whim. So he's a key part of that part of the process. And, you know, just an ideal fit for this current stage of our growth.
So you mentioned earlier that you were talking about your 18-month sort of roadmap, and I think it was in the context of Desktop Now. So can you tell us what the roadmap is?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just get the NDA forms out and email them to everybody.
Here's how this works.
Yeah.
If you agree by NDA,
say
nothing. All right, chat room's empty, so everyone replies. Go ahead.
We're just going to continue to build that enterprise readiness is the main thing. Just, you know, continue to say everything we've learned, the lessons we picked up from our customers. You know, workflow is such a big thing in these large organizations where you have 20 teams of administrators in different departments all working together, managing the user experience. And one team look after bits of the application, one team looks after security, you know, one team looks after patching, desktop lifecycle, all those things. How do you combine all that? How do you get them to work together in a structured way?
So when you say enterprise readiness, you mean like so your products fit into the enterprise, not just in terms of, you know, scalability and non-crashiness, but also just that it can fit into the workflow of the way enterprises do their business.
We built this thing now, so it will. We know it scales to the size they're dealing with. You know, we've learned the lessons of hardware there, but we've done it. We know it, and it was. It now scales. Now we've got to integrate with their workflows, the way that they live day in, day out, and their maintenance life cycles, and make sure it integrates everything else they're doing, because they maintain all kinds of systems, and we need to be just an effortless part of that. So, and we've built a lot of APIs and PowerShell scripting and things into the product, so we can integrate with them. We want to make it more seamless, so you know we're providing the UIs out of the box, so that it's all part of that. So that's a key thing: is making sure we know we do an even better job of dealing with you know the enterprise workflows. That's
22 because you guys can be as agile as you want, but a lot of times maybe your customers aren't.
Oh yeah,
so you have to deal with that kind of thing. You can't have a new release once a week.
Oh yeah, no, we have a quarterly window. You know, it's coming up, and this stuff will go into staging for 6 weeks and user acceptance testing for 4 weeks. So you've got to be there on that date with a product that we can integrate. And once you're into that window, that's it. There are no more updates coming to it. So those are the kind of things that, you know, you learn as you deal with these just enormous multinationals. And, you know, and we're fitting in now. That's what we've got to.
So have you seen, this is shifting gears a little bit, but I meant to ask you earlier, but I forgot. I did a video on the website a couple of days ago for this company called A4, A-F-O-R-E.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did we talk about them on the show, Gabe? I think maybe
I thought we did, but maybe we shot a video with them, and I know that we talked about them on a recap that maybe we did for Search for a Tool Desktop, but maybe we didn't talk about them.
So
on
I want
the
you guys
show.
To buy them. That's where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah,
because
I'd be a fan of that.
I love these guys. It seems like the technology
you
is
own
cool.
Stock or something.
No. Well, actually, yeah. Let me pause that. Let me make a phone call. Then
we go acquire some stock.
Yeah, but it's. You know, because I don't know how big this company is, because they've been doing security stuff, something about VMs for like 10 years. So they got this new product, and it's the one where it's kind of like MAM for Windows, right? So where it runs a little shim, and then but I feel like what you guys are doing with Data Now and with the application manager and all of it, and it fits right because it just kind of fits right in with everything, and. I feel like it would be really cool. And the thing is with them, so the problem A4 is going to have is, I think they get what's going on, but they're not really VDI desktop. Like, I had to tell them because they were saying, oh, we think it works for VDI. And I'm like, no, you should use this for all the desktops. It should be the same. And they're like, yeah, I guess so, which is fine. But like, I don't want to hold their hand And then people buy a separate product. I want it to just be like, when you buy desktop now, this just comes with it.
Right. The really unique play here would be to make sure that the policies that you're putting around MAM in Windows are the same policies you're putting around MAM on mobile devices and other endpoints as well.
And so, configuration, too. So it says, this is my mail. Maybe, again, that's a bad example. It's overplayed. But, like, and it just works from wherever.
Yeah, well, that's as much speculation I was going to give out on our long-term planning. But, I can be with you more. It goes back to the point we made earlier. You know, the Windows desktop, managing the whole desktop in an increasingly BYO world makes increasingly less sense.
Yeah.
You want to literally put that secured container on that endpoint. That's the corporate world. You manage that part. That bit stays secure. If I leave the company, well, it disappears overnight. So,
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. So, you know, that brings us to a good segue to when... to fill in the listeners... So, you know, we're kind of like just shooting the breeze before we go on. And John says to me, hey, so we put this whole persistent, non-persistent argument to bed yet? or have we argued it enough? And I was like, why? And he's like, well, I meant to. But anyway, I said, let's talk about it.
Okay. So, well, Grams, what was my point I was going to make on that? I made a note here. Well, I mean, we kind of talked about a little bit with the whole the fact that the terminal server session host thing is the ultimate non-persistent desktop, and we're still seeing so much around that. Again, spent a long time this morning talking this through with a company who wants to move to a non-persistent VDI, have a stateless desktop they can stream applications into, and what's the whole workflow around that? So rather than doing user installed applications, which is the most boring topic, is more user self-service applications. So I have an actual app store I can go to and kind of say, well, I want the following applications, and I'll put these to my cost center and stream them in real time. And then making sure that set of applications and my preferences follow me anytime I log on to any device. And all the pieces are actually in existence to do it. It's just tying it all together. And again, it's about our API and our scripting and everything else come together. It's like, how do I join your internally built app store into our ability to deploy customizations and settings for the individual applications with our personalization piece and just join it all together? And it can all be done. It's a little bit of work, but And it was just an interesting mode rather than... Because somehow we always seem to end... out talking about layering and user installed applications whenever we get into non-persistent VDI. And it's just, it's sort of, I remember you coming to Quest 3 years ago and rolling your eyes and saying, I think this layering thing is going to be a bust. Those exact words. And here we are. And, I really want cloud volumes to have finally figured this stuff out. Cloud volumes?
Yeah, and FS Logix. Do you know FS Logix? Kevin Goodman and Randy Cook's new company is doing something like this also.
Yeah, I mean, so cloud volumes, let's have another run at the pure layering thing. We're just actually doing a couple of joint customers with them right now, and we've had our two development teams working together to make sure our stuff works together. Really smart, interesting little company. But there's also, Unidesk are out there and still doing their thing. Mocha 5, I always wish they'd break out their layering into a separate standalone product.
And, I thought they did.
Did they? I thought it was available in VMware.
I think it's just an agreement they had with Dell Quest.
Didn't you tell me that?
We owned the whole product. We never just took the layering piece.
That's right. Yeah. So, because I think it is available, but maybe it's only OEM available. Is it the layering?
I thought they called it layering, yeah.
Okay. I apologize to Mocha 5 that I'm spreading false information, but I always love their layering stuff.
John Whaley of Mocha 5 is always the first to, correct me whenever I say that there's issues with layering.
They took a very simple approach to it, which is put every app the user installs into one combined container. Mm-hmm. Don't try and break it into lots of little containers and then break them up. So it's got advantages and disadvantages to that approach. I don't want to bash anybody else who's got a different approach to it. Because cloud volumes go back to the approach of putting every application or groups of applications into separate volumes. There's pros and cons to every approach.
So the question, back to the layering thing, and the whole persistence, non-persistence, it kind of depends on what your goal is. Like, is your goal to support user-installed apps?
Right.
Or is your goal to support user self-provisioning of pre-packaged, pre-authorized apps? Because then, if that's the case, you're mentioning this customer who is wants to go non-persistent VDI with all their sort of apps on demand. And I guess if they can get all their apps into whatever platform they're going to use and it works... Now, granted, I still understand why they're not doing terminal server for that, but that's a different conversation.
Well, I think they might be able to. I think they might be able to do that. Actually, it's just app compatibility and support thing. But I'm kind of with you on that one.
What do you see? Like, you know, so you're out there talking to customers. Do you, most VDI today?
Oh, I know. Sorry.
Most VDI today. Do you say this majority of persistent?
It is. And I think the thing that has changed, I know that you made this point a while ago, but you were early on the Nutanix thing. Nutanix is like the fastest growing company in the valley right now. Yeah. It's insane.
God, you saw their booth at VMworld? It was crazy.
Yeah,
they had like 40 billion employees.
I mean,
they have won the best of VMworld 3 years in a row in three different award categories.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they're an example of the kind of companies that have changed the argument, because you used to do non-persistent VDI because it was much cheaper, because you could use cheaper storage. And the fact that you have got these solutions now which change the storage equation so that doing persistent VDI is, you know, with the caching and deduplication is so much less expensive than it used to be. I think that has changed it more in favor of, you know, persistent VDI is not the scary thing it used to be. However, the only argument I would make on this is you've always said, you know, you already manage Windows desktops, so why not just take the same management methodology you have for physical Windows desktops and manage persistent VDI desktops with it, and we're good, right?
Yeah.
That's true in some organizations. I think a lot of organizations went, managing our traditional physical Windows desktops is really hard and expensive, and hopefully moving to, we want to go to VDI because it might be cheaper that way. And
So my counter to that, I agree with what you just said, by the way, but I've said, look, so I agree that managing Windows the old way sucks, and it's probably expensive and inefficient, so there are better ways to do it. But in order to get these better ways, you don't need VDI to do that. So if you want to go to a more non-persistent, which is code for, you know, locked down.
Yep.
If you want to go to more locked down desktop where all your apps are streamed on demand, I can do that via a bunch of traditional tools like AppSent to my physical desktops. I can re-ghost all my machines every week. You know, I can use policy control and lockdown so users can't change stuff and take away admin rights. So my point is, I agree 100% that probably every organization can simplify their lessen the expense of the environment, but you don't need VDI to do that. And in fact, I think a lot of VDI projects fail because people try to go from persistent to non-persistent. And it's not the VDI-ness that fails, it's the non-persistentness that fails.
Yeah.
Yet VDI gets blamed for it.
Yeah. There's IT directors and CIOs the world over who have made their careers by server consolidation with virtualization, and would dearly love to be able to get the same cost savings and benefits with desktops. And desktops are a different beast. I'm not saying those savings aren't out there, but it's not the same. You know, night and day, going from physical to virtual servers, you don't see the same massive benefits that you get with servers.
Yeah, so we just underestimate how. It's just, you know, servers are already in the data center, and so when you virtualize a server, the user doesn't care,
right?
They don't know,
right?
And when you virtualize what's in their hand, now it's personal.
You took away my wallpaper.
See, but man, I'm sick of that wallpaper example.
Kitty cursor. And, it's anything, though. And really, the users know what they want now more than ever. So it's not the wallpaper. That's frivolous. Now it's you took away my everything.
Yeah. Because the reason I jump on that wallpaper thing is because I've heard a lot of VMware people talk about like why you need, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. Like, oh, yeah, we came with the wallpaper back. I'm like, yeah, roaming profiles could do it in 1994. Like, the wallpaper is not the issue.
You're right. That is absolutely the worst example. And the other one we get dragged into, because it's like the default every example goes, is, you know, file mappings and printer drive, you know, printers. It's like, really, is that the most important thing in your world? Is, you know, what your U-Drive points to your user folder on the home share.
Yeah.
The really things that really matter about, I mean, those things are important, obviously, to a user environment, making their, you know, workspace transparent between physical and virtual desktops. I'm not belittling those things. The best examples are always like, what does my application connect to when I boot it up for the first time? Which of the many servers available in my infrastructure does it connect to? You know, to make sure I'm actually getting the right. When my developers look at Visual Studio, are they pointing at the right servers? You know, are their toolbars in the right place? Have they got the right libraries installed? I mean, those kind of things are night and day business productivity if you don't virtualize or you don't ensure those persist correctly. That's the kind of stuff that that brings huge value. So that's,
I'll bet you though, you have customers who are paying hundreds of dollars per user just so the U-Drive is
actually the printer case actually is probably even more critical. Make sure that when I click print, the printer next to me is the one that spits out my financial spreadsheet and not the one three departments away in, you know, marketing. Yeah. You know, because, you know, making sure my printer follows me, and when I disconnect from one Citrix session over here and reconnect over there, it intelligently finds out you've moved, you're at home now, and you shouldn't be printing this stuff out at all.
Yeah.
That actually is a massive use case still. So, yeah.
Are you guys, one of the things I've always, has always been a feature of Application Manager, this is absolutely one of the apps since Desktop Now, you know, one of the three products in there,
yeah,
has been, you could use almost like resource hacking of executables and take icons mm-hmm. out and disable different menu items based on different conditions and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I always had this utopian fantasy that you could write rules, because technically it's possible, for example, to do based on session size, mm-hmm. like screen size. So, you know, if you connect from Word and you're on a smaller size screen, then it just removes a bunch of menu items and it removes a bunch of toolbar items. And I'm not even talking with, like, Word actual, like, changing toolbars. I mean, you can literally, the AppSense product has, like, a resource hacker thing that goes into the executable and lets you
yeah.
take menu items out of executables. Like Jim Kenzig's old gray program neighborhood, if you remember that from the 90s. I always thought it was like an app transformation kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you could actually have, you know, single seamless applications where using AppSense Application Manager, the application would change based on the form factor of the client you were connecting from. But that didn't really... Does anyone do that? Because it seems cool. But why not?
It sounds cool. The problem is, if you're on a different form factor device, there's usually a different version of an application that does something very similar natively built for that device to get a better user experience.
And well, then why are people using VDI from tablets?
Are they?
I mean, it seems like that's still a big selling point for VDI.
No. That's how we as IT guys get tablets from our companies.
Dude, I mean, I just got out of a meeting with Deathstone, and they were talking about that exact same thing. Oh, mobility and 4G.
Well,
and
okay. Two points I need to make. So first of all, the ability to turn off menus, buttons, that kind of stuff was really a security use case.
Yeah, I know.
That was, you know,
it's a perversion of use case, but I think my idea is cool, right?
It is cool, but...
However...
people pay money for cool. Well, you know, a bunch of colorful iPhones got launched yesterday, so I guess people will pay money
right?
for cool.
Look at how silver my laptop is, and look at this logo. Yeah, we got gold iPhones now, so yes, we'll pay money for cool. And by the way, can I say that I hope this, in hindsight, is when Apple jumped the shark by releasing
gold iPhone.
But yeah. I'm afraid I'm going to be wrong, and actually every other company is going to start releasing gold shit now all the time. So anyway, though, will people pay for cool? Maybe not. When it's like enterprise IT cool. But the point was like this... It's a security feature.
Yeah. That's when we actually do that. Yeah,
and but I wanted to use it for app transformation. But
About you. Why do people put VDI on tablets? I mean, the use cases, the real ones for that actually is where I have a healthcare application. Uh-huh. I'm a doctor carrying a tablet. I have an application that's only available for Windows, and it gives me real time diagnosis or views of X-rays or patient scans. And I'm walking around between one hospital bed to another, and as I move between locations, I need to have that application with me at all times. Updates. Yeah. That's the really interesting use case there. Yeah. And that one I completely get.
And there's FrameHawk for that. Do you know FrameHawk?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love them. So they're – maybe you should buy them too. How much money do you guys have?
Oh.
Go back to – who's that? Goldman?
Goldman Sachs.
Gave you $75 million, right? How much of that's left? Because get some more. And so if you buy A4, it's just the A4 CyberX product. Yeah. I don't care about the other ones. And FrameHawk, all.
What else have we got on the shopping list?
Those are good starts. Hey, when it's not my money, it's easy to...
Yeah.
It's easy to...
It's just fun spending someone else's money. Yeah.
But you guys have VC now, so that's not what that's all you do anyway.
they get mad if you don't spend
Rapsphere, it. Rapsphere was your money? Come on.
Yeah, but he was.
Was that from before? I don't know when the time.
No, that was after Goldman.
Yeah,
that was.
But FrameHawk though. I mean, so I like their protocol and their sort of app transformation, you know, for tablets and all that sort of thing. But I think I don't know. don't know if that's a use case or not, but like the AppSense, you know, the application manager.
I think we're going to live at a different level in the stack there. I don't think we're ever going to get involved in the actual infrastructure of delivering, you know, display protocols and those kind of things. We're going to live very much around managing the user experience, the user workspace. And whether you're using Framehawk or any other method of deploying Windows applications onto other devices, you know, we'll sit at that middle piece where we're making sure that the user experience is secure and consistent. And that's kind of
so I guess my idea is kind of getting out of your space also, if you're sort of using Application Manager to transform how applications look and feel and behave.
That it's definitely on the edge of the, you know, where we're at. It's just, you know, you very quickly become like a application tools developer at that point, or a developer tools kind of company at that point.
Yeah.
But it's not... Except
that you're developer tools put in the hands of system engineers, which is even worse.
It's been a little bit years ago at Citrix. I mean, I was walking around with remember the compact iPack? Same size as one of... we're not on video. Here are we. I'm holding up the smartphone. And... only 320 by 240 pixels at the time, but we had an ICA client for that back in the day.
I was
demonstrating that in 99.
I had the sleeve, the one in the back, that added a PCMCA card to it,
which I could put
my original One XRTT card from Verizon, and that sleeve even had another battery in it because it needed it.
Yeah.
And the whole kit was about, you know, three iPads thick, three iPhones thick, and about an hour battery life with a capacitive... touchscreen.
But the point was, even then we were putting Windows applications on these things and saying, wouldn't it be cool if we could somehow, you know, modify the application to fit the form factor better or change the UI?
Yeah.
And even back then we made a decision, you know what, people are actually going to make applications that work better on this form factor natively.
What? Then how did Project Vertigo slip through?
Yeah, wait, was that your project? I was going to ask that before when you said
Vertigo.
It's Citrix.
Which one was that?
Project Vertigo.
Oh, that was the ViewSoft thing, wasn't it, I think?
I don't know. So this is Citrix experimental project where you build your UI and it's like write once, run anywhere.
It ran
on Palm and CE and
web. Yes. That was the real-time...
Project Vertigo is what we call it.
Yeah.
Because it just disappeared.
It just vanished.
Yeah, okay.
I found there's one article on it.
It's at least... 13 years ago. I'm struggling a bit to remember. 14.
It's from 2000, actually, from August of 2000.
Look at you. Yeah. 13
years.
I'm corrected.
It's Google.
He's like, Google. I worked there, asshole. I promise you I know when it was. Okay.
I think and the idea was to... Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, it was to link native controls from... So you'd build a UI for each device and link it to the same back-end piece of application infrastructure.
Yep.
That way. So again, it was actually the same answer, which was, you know, the UI will need to be different on every endpoint, but you design at least the application business logic just once.
Mm-hmm.
That was that was the idea. But with the idea that you're always online, you need to be always connected because...
And now we have HTML5 anyway, that like that's kind
Or the Zenit Mobility SDK, which just reformats it for the screens that on the devices that it's on. Reformats Windows apps for those screens. That was the ViewSoft stuff. I mean, what else were you responsible for, John M. Sam?
Well, actually, that wasn't that was never mine. The Vertigo wasn't, sorry. But I demoed it for a while. I remember showing some developer conference. Like, I know how to, you know, I'm apparently a genius developer, but I showed them how the ViewSoft stuff worked, building controls and linking into an application in real time. I did the MetaFrame for Unix stuff was where I cut my
really?
Team. Yeah.
Wow.
Which was, I walked into a customer last week who was still using it, which was great. Because there's a small number, but of absolutely sticky applications, which are still running on, were built for Unix mainframes, Unix, you know, workstations. Particularly in, you know, semiconductor manufacture, those kind of things. And they are still on those applications to this day. And that's a platform to this day, and the Windows version just has not the same capabilities or power, and that's what they need to deploy to Windows desktops.
Wow.
And so that was...
what does MetaFrame for Unix bring to the table that you don't just have with like a regular X Windows client?
It's not X Windows. It uses SCA.
Right, yeah, so you could get to any client on it, which was actually surprisingly useful.
Oh, okay,
useful.
So it's just... So like if you were in a desktop...
Well, yeah.
Okay, so if you're in a corporate environment... It could be X Windows, the client installed, that's fine on a LAN or whatever, but this is just like getting all the benefits, quote unquote, of ICA.
Yeah. So my right, and you have cross-site development. You might have some semiconductor designer one place and the fab plant somewhere different. They all need to get to the same applications. So there were quite a number of use cases where we found these old X11 applications that were just always there. So semiconductors was definitely one of them. Sort of some of the CAD/CAM stuff, Forex financial trading as well. Yeah, I think that has finally shifted to Windows, but that was very sticky on X11 on Unix for a long, long time. Telco as well. A lot of old telco apps, managing networks and all those kinds of telephone switches and things. Again, all Unix stuff. So it was, never a huge product. Had niche markets, niche applications, but very sticky and added value there. So that was my first thing. Then I in my last year at Citrix, I owned the ICA clients as well. So that's why I was running around with an iPack and the rest of my life.
I worked for Compaq, which is why I was running around with an iPack.
Oh, okay,
So you had one because your work gave it to you. I had one because my work gave it to me. Everyone else had Palm Pilots because that's what the whole world used in those days.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right, with my OmniSky modem. Still the thing I spent the most money on and used the least amount. Like, I can walk in, I can enter into any purchase and say, I've spent more on less and mean it because of that OmniSky modem. So I could buy a car and say, I've gotten less for more money. And that OmniSky modem was such a waste.
So that justifies any amount of financial frivolity on your part.
Oh, right.
At least five figures. Yeah.
I just bought a new pinball machine together. So
heard about this. Yeah. The software-defined pinball machine.
Well, so this is and our world is so the newer pinball machines, it's all LCD screens and RGB LEDs that can be any color and fully adjustable and everything. So it's really cool. So we burned an hour, man.
Wow.
So I don't know if you have any other thoughts or anything that you wanted to bring up that we did not talk about. But otherwise, it is 6 p.m.
The only thing that's bugging me very slightly is I sound like I've been the terminal server evangelist here. And it's like, I mean,
good company.
Yeah, but there is no one correct answer to desktop or physical or virtual. However you're deploying Windows desktops, I mean, the only thing I wanted to say is a desktop now is designed to cover all those scenarios and let you mix and match between them. If I sound like I'm the terminal server bigot, then that's not by design.
So it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right.
What you just said is exactly what I talk about in a presentation that I've given in the past called Getting VDI Functionality Without Doing VDI, saying that you can use technologies like user environment management, for instance, on your physical desktops as well, or in your terminal server, or in VDI. You can use them across the board, and so you should, because that makes it much easier to move between form factors later.
But I kind of want to say that's the quote of the show. What you said, John, because you said something along the lines of, I'll go back and listen to the tape, but something like, I don't want to sound like a terminal server bigot, but but it's just like, it just makes so much sense all the time. Same with me. I don't want to sound like I hate VDI, but goddamn, VDI doesn't make sense at all.
My religious zealotry has been emboldened by my visit. These last 2 weeks I spent on the road talking to some of the world's largest, organizations and financial institutions, and proudly saying we have managed to get, 100% of our application estate running on session host under Windows Server 2012, and that's what we're deploying for the next, 3 years. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Now, it takes a little extra work to get there, but there's no technical barrier whatsoever.
Does it take as much work as VDI?
Well,
and ongoing, not just to create it, but also to manage it it's been deployed. And I don't know that it does, and that's why RDSH. That's why we like it so much.
Yeah, it takes more work to get the application working on there. You may have to tweak a few things, apply a few work. I mean, the classic example, we've had this argument for 15 years now. I've got this application. It writes to c/ myconfig.ini. And every user overwrites that. That application is deemed to be not compatible on terminal server. So you have to do some kind of redirection trick, which, by the way, is built into Environment Manager.
Yeah, it's also built in the OS.
We wrap it up seamlessly. So it's just like Brian logs in and that, you don't need to do anything. It'll just work.
So that's like the same. This is like so on your Mercedes S-Class for $97,000, it tells you your tires are low. Whereas on your Ford Fiesta, you got to check them with
the wheel pulls to one side.
So, okay, you're right. Yes, it does do that automatically with VDI.
My point was, out of the box, it's going to work first time, so you don't need to employ quite such a smart guy in application packaging as you need to. But that's...
So I forgot what I was going to say. Something on that terminal server thing. So, okay, yeah. Forget it. Any other thoughts? Just on anything we talked about today?
No, this has been great. Thank you for the opportunity to just catch you all up on what AmpSense is doing and, look forward to more proactive communication going forward.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you were able to come on and too bad we had to go halfway around the world to do it.
I know. At some point, we really should actually probably meet up.
Like, no.
San Francisco.
Can I tell you one of the things? So the article I did on AmpSense 2 weeks ago, there's two things I wish I wouldn't have done in that article. One is I mentioned fellow gin lover John Rawls. And I didn't expect that article to cause such a shitstorm, as it did. And now I'm just worried that your name is forever tied to loving gin. I said fellow gin lover, and it's true, but I just hope that people don't think that, like, now, you know, you're a raging alcoholic because I called you out in this article.
Yeah, that reputation had already preceded me. So,
although,
I think we're quits now because I think we owed you, or I owed you gin from another accident in a previous life. And so I think we're probably quits now. So that's a good thing, yeah.
And then, the other thing I didn't like about that article is that I wrote about having pissant blog or something to write about it at 11 o'clock at night. I did not write that article at 11 o'clock at night. It was part of my shtick because I'm like, in the shtick, it's like, new company, new CEO, this happens. Pissant blog is something to write about. I didn't mean that I was a pissant blogger.
Oh.
But on that end, we're in London. It's 6:06 p.m. And so I say, let's go out and find some good gin.
Or a coffee, perhaps.
Oh, right.
And then some gin.
Right. We're gonna go get coffee now. A bunch of folks are in town. So Jim Moyle's here.
Oh, cool.
Kevin Goodman is in town for this show we've got tomorrow. There's a guy named Nigel Woods who's around. So we're going to go join them for dinner.
Great.
So Gabe and Justin, you guys enjoy work. John and I are going to go get some food.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Well. Okay.
All right, well, so thank you everyone for listening. This is Brian Madden with John Rawls, something product management for Desktop Now for AmpSense, and then Gabe here in Omaha. Thank you so much.
See ya.
Bye.